My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes.
It is essential that our team learns to work with our new recruit, not against him.
I'm a geek, walking down the street.
Check the computer.
The mainframe computer.
I access the mainframe.
At the end of this day, one shall stand, one shall fall.
Time to find out.
Welcome to Basically a Geek Show. Here are your hosts, Mike and Jack.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 11 of Basically a Geek Show. My name's Mike, and joining me, as always, is the man who gets his news from Hitler parody rants, Jack.
Bah means no.
And with that little bit of randomness, let's get going. So, at the end of our last episode, our super mega episode 10, we talked some Game of Thrones, and I don't want to say we got something wrong, but we ran into that trap that is talking about a weekly TV series and talking about it on the air just hours before episode 2 of season 4, you know, took the air. So.
Right.
We weren't expecting anything mind-blowing to happen, and boy, were we wrong. So, I believe you predicted, Jack, that Joffrey would die at the wedding.
I did, and I was right about that. Mm-hmm. What I was woefully wrong about was when that wedding would take place. I figured, you know, maybe about three quarters of the way through the season or end season. Mm-hmm. What we got was two shows in, Joffrey bites the big one in a way that some are calling unsatisfying, others have no issue with. I mean, I've heard the reports that say, you know, he deserves so much worse than what he got, and people saying that. And trust me, I mean, I do agree with you to an extent. But what kind of counters that with me is the fact that the fucker bled out of his eyeballs. You don't come back from that.
No, you don't. No, you don't. On the topic of Joffrey, and, you know, let's not kid ourselves. This is the episode where Joffrey died. Other things happened, technically, but this is the episode where Joffrey died. There's right. No way around it. It's kind of like WrestleMania. That is, you know, people talk about Antonio Cesaro winning the Battle Royal or Daniel Bryan winning the WWE Championship. No. That's the WrestleMania where Undertaker lost. This is the Game of Thrones episode where Joffrey dies. And on that topic, you know, my first thought was, thank fucking God, finally, the little pissant is dead.
Yeah.
Thoughts after that? I don't think his death was unsatisfying. I get maybe why some people would say that, but realistically, Joffrey was so hated, so just loathed.
Nothing that could have been done short of having an hour-long torture porn episode where, you know, cheese graters get raked over his skin and then he gets waterboarded in cat urine. I mean, very little short of that, and even that wouldn't have satisfied some people. I mean, hardly anything short of an hour-long torture porn episode would have really done Joffrey justice.
Yeah. I was thinking the only thing that could potentially have done it justice would have been everyone in the kingdom taking a turn stabbing him in the eyes, and then after he slowly bled to death, the ghost of Ned Stark appears to teabag him.
Yeah, or maybe like the other would-be kings of Westeros unite to form the Megazord and just fucking chop him down.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, you guys get our point. Joffrey dying was bound to disappoint. The way in which he died was bound to disappoint some people just because he was such a colossal tool bag. And let's face it, a very effective villain. Just because of those factors, no death was going to be satisfying to everyone. So given that, you know, the guy bled out of his eyes, God, that sounds terrible. I'm content with his death. But, you know, Joffrey dying, that leads us to the question, who was behind it. And keep in mind, again, neither Jack or I have read the books, and we're kind of willingly staying ignorant on that front. So, Jack, who do you think killed Joffrey?
Well, on that note, I want to say, you know, I hope that they don't go in the direction of this where the rest of the season is going to focus around this fucking fantasy murder mystery.
Who killed JR? Medieval edition?
Exactly. Exactly. Who killed JR? I don't want to see that. You know, I don't think they will, but it's still kind of like, oh God, please, let's not do this. And hopefully they won't.
Everyone's got motive.
Yeah, I mean, everybody, literally everybody has motive to have killed this little twat. If I had to put my money on anybody, I'd say Granny.
The grandmother of his, fiance, wife. I'm not sure if like the actual wedding happens, but you know.
Yeah, I would say her because she's very Machiavellian in, you know, how she handles things. She's connected. She's wise, perhaps beyond almost anybody else on the show. And no one would see it coming. No one would see her orchestrating this or doing this because of that. A, she's an old lady. B, she handles herself and manipulates those around her in such a way that, you know, no one really catches on to her. No one thinks ill of her. And Joffrey's would-be wife as well is a lot the same way. You know, they didn't really do much on this.
She was the one who pointed him towards the pie that ended up killing.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, I believe both of their motives are actually to suspect because they seem to be really nice.
and you don't trust nice people?
Right, exactly. they might have their own kind of end game in mind here, their own kind of thing planned, and you know. So I don't really fully trust either of them. I think, but I do think it was Granny with, you know, Wifey Wiferson is an accomplice, perhaps.
Most likely is
an accomplice.
The only thing I take issue with that though is that. They have a lot to gain. I mean, she was marrying the king. That's a pretty big, you know, promotion in terms of power grabbing. And you've kind of killed your own potential jump in influence by killing him. So I'm not sure if it's in their best motives to kill Joffrey, because Joffrey's sort of their golden ticket at the moment.
Well, that's just it. You don't know if it's in their best motives because we don't know their motives.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, beyond the sheer fact that Joffrey's a cunt. But beyond that, they're both the type that in and of itself isn't going to be enough to do it. That might be a part of the reason and most likely was part of the reason.
Mm-hmm.
But there would be some bigger reason behind that for them to have done it. And I think it was, I think we can all safely say it most likely was not Tyrion, though it looks like he's being railroaded for it.
He's gonna get the blame's gonna fall on him. Cersei is going to pick him as the murderer. Do you think he lives?
Tyrion?
Yeah.
I sure as fuck hope so.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
I think
this show is running out of people to actually like because it keeps killing them.
Yeah. Tyrion is a slippery little fuck.
Mm-hmm.
He's smart. He knows what he's doing. I think he can get his way out. If nothing else, I can almost maybe even see Uncle Dad coming in and helping out Tyrion.
Jaime?
You know, maybe. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because him and Cersei, they're kind of having a little bit of trouble in paradise.
Well, she's being completely unreasonable. She's like, why didn't you come to rescue me? I was kidnapped!
Yeah.
And my hand was cut off!
Yeah, you know, I'm sorry, I just couldn't find it in my schedule, what with the 8 a.m. torturings, the 9 p.m. to 6 a.m. sleep deprivation. My schedule was booked, darling, I'm sorry.
Yeah, she's kind of being a bitch. I mean, well, she's Cersei, she's always a bitch, but this just seems petty, even for her.
Yeah, you should have came sooner. Oh, I'm sorry. Wow, I'm such an ass. It's always about me, isn't it? You know,
my they cut off my hand.
It's always about you, isn't it?
Exactly. Exactly. But yeah, I don't see Tyrion dying. I think he's way too smart to just sort of go, you know, get taken out like that. He'll find a way out. He'll find a way to at least escape, if not clear his name. I'm just kind of curious to see, I believe Joffrey's brother, Tommen is taking the throne now. And,
yeah, that's weird because, I mean, well, not weird, I guess, but it's kind of an unknown factor because we really haven't seen or heard hardly anything of him to the point to where I'd even forgotten he had a brother.
Yeah, he showed up, here and there throughout seasons 1 and 2, was completely absent from season 3, and then they brought him back for season 4. He's not a factor. He's kind of the guy who you never expected to be king. The younger brother of the king never, ever, in any situation, expects to ever be king, right? Like, yeah. So, you know, how he turns out, that's going to be interesting. But what I think is interesting in all this is that this actually represents a huge gain of influence for Cersei and potentially for Jaime, because they were kind of on the outs with Joffrey marrying into this new family. It seemed as if the Lannisters were kind of seeing their influence dwindle a bit. And now it's not, you know, now they have their younger son on the throne, and they are probably going to have some sort of power, either in an official or unofficial regency position. This kid was young. This kid, I think, is younger than when Joffrey was, when Joffrey took the throne. So yeah. There's going to be a lot of, so, you know, essentially the power is going to be in the hands of the Lannisters once again.
Which is where they want it. And that in and of itself kind of lends some credibility to the idea that maybe one of them actually plotted to kill Joffrey.
If it would have been, Jaime. I don't think Cersei ever would have killed Joffrey. She was too attached to that little shit stain.
Yeah, I suppose so. Though, I mean, if she could turn around to Jaime and act the way she did towards him, then really very little would surprise me out of her.
I guess I just don't see her going on.
I don't either. I mean, I'm not putting that forward as me being like, called it. Mm-hmm. No, I'm just saying, I'm sticking my guns on this one. I'm saying Granny.
Grambo.
Yeah, Grandmarama. Ninja Granny. Make you bleed out your fucking eyeballs, bitch.
That was so satisfying to watch. I had people texting me saying, like, the next morning saying, like, I'm still reveling in it. So, whoa. You know, here's to Joffrey. Very effective villain, fantastic antagonist, and the actor who portrays him, I hope you find peace, and I hope you find happiness in your future in volunteer work, because you deserve it. I really hope someday those people on the bus stop spitting on you.
My grandma flipped me off. It was the worst birthday I've ever had.
So that is our Game of Thrones addendum, I suppose. But moving on to Transformers.
Actually, we did get one prediction kind of wrong.
Oh, okay.
But there was one that I got kind of more right than wrong.
Okay.
And this actually pertains to the new Godzilla movie. Now, you called on this, like, I don't know, a couple episodes ago, and you're like, hey, you know, everyone's saying that this is Mothra in this trailer.
Yes, from the international trailer, yes.
Yeah, and I categorically said that these people were a bunch of fucking morons.
Because you're a moth racist.
I am. I really am. Fuck them, you know. Damn lighties. Yeah, lighties, because they fly to – I'm working way too hard on that, aren't I?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. So Yeah, everyone said it's Mothra, and I took, you know, I took one look at it. I'm like, no, no fucking way that's Mothra. Two things. One, the form, the outline, the profile, whatever you want to call it, did not match an insect, a flying insect.
Mm-hmm.
It just did not because of jointed, you know, wings, what have you. Secondly, Gareth Edwards, the director, has gone on record several times saying that there aren't going to be any other licensed Toho monsters in this movie except for Godzilla.
Well, yes, but Marvel Studios also told us that we were getting the Mandarin in Iron Man 3, and we saw how that turned out.
Very true. Very true.
I'm just saying, you can't – in this day and age where deception seems to be the name of the game, you can't really – take anything at face – you can't take any statement from a producer or director or even an actor at face value.
Right. And that's why I said if it is going to be a Toho licensed character, it would be Rodan, mm-hmm. not Mothra.
Mm-hmm.
That it categorically is not Mothra.
Mm-hmm.
If it's going to be a licensed, already known character, it would be Rodan because that would be the only one that fit that profile. And Rodan actually did kind of match that outline a bit to me. As it would either be Rodan or – it would be, you know, wow, you know, someone actually delivering what they say and not having any other licensed monsters in the movie besides Godzilla.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that the latter is true.
Mm-hmm.
It is another monster that is not, you know, any kind of other affiliation with Toho.
It's an original creation for the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an original monster for the movie. Now, be that for better or for worse, that remains to be seen. I personally, I don't know. I've seen toys of it.
Yeah, let's talk about how this image was leaked to the general populace. They haven't shown it in the trailers, or they've only shown body parts in the trailers. They haven't shown this full monster yet. But
Bandai, however, has no such concerns.
No, Bandai says, screw your marketing gimmicks. Bandai, who has the license for the Godzilla films toys in the United States, have released a series of Godzilla products, one of which is a city set. You know, it comes with a little destructible city, and it comes with a little Godzilla, and it comes with this other monster, which the package doesn't even indicate what this other monster is called. We don't know the name of this thing.
Right. Yeah, they're just across the board being referred to as Mutos, sounds kind of like Mentos, but not.
It kind of sounds lame, really. It sounds like you're 10 years old and you create your own Godzilla monster and you just kind of Mutos. I mean, it just doesn't – it's a name that seems out of place next to Godzilla, in my opinion. But I don't even know if that's the official name of it or if that was just a production name that they kind of just slapped on until they had a proper name. Because this Bandai toy set doesn't indicate what this thing is. It just says, like, City Destruction Pack, Godzilla, and this other thing. But,
yeah.
But this, so Bandai kind of, you know, jumped the gun, as it were, and, we have this Muto monster revealed, and you're right, it has, I can definitely see how it has a very vague Rodan-esque silhouette.
Yeah, it does. Now, from the toy, you really can't tell how this damn thing is capable of flight.
Mm.
I'm guessing some kind of, you know, expandable wing deal kind of thing, maybe.
I think on its front legs slash arms, because it kind of looks like an extreme praying mantis in that regard, where like the arms dip down into like an arch, and it's like walking on its knuckles almost.
Right.
I suspect that those front arms, probably when it comes to the CGI model, will be able to unfurl into wings.
Yeah, that's my guess too. Just if I were to solely judge my opinion of this creature
mm-hmm.
Based on the toys, I would say that I am not very impressed.
How so? As a Godzilla aficionado and as a kaiju aficionado, what don't you like about it?
I don't know. I mean, it just seems kind of – it looks like – okay, you know those times when I make a joke and it's just so over-the-top complicated, and you're like, nah, Jack, you tried too hard.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like they tried too hard on this.
Mm.
It looks like they tried too hard to do something that hasn't been done, and they kind of forgot temporarily that, well, if it hasn't been done, then maybe there's a reason for it. I'm reserving final judgment until I see it in the movie, because I mean, you really can't make a fair assessment on something like this based on a toy, mm-hmm. and you know, a cheaply made one at that. I mean, Bandai has not done a very good job on these figures for the most part, and this one is no exception. So, you know, I'm not going to make an entire judgment based on a poorly made toy, but it just from what I've seen, I'm not that big of a fan. Mm-hmm. The overall design, even if the overall body shape and design are indicative of what to expect, then I think they might have tried a bit too hard.
Interesting, because when I see this, I kind of get, in terms of monster design at least, I kind of get a slight, not entirely, but just a slight Cloverfield vibe. The knuckle dragging mostly, because that the Cloverfield monster was a knuckle dragger. And this looks to be one too.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is, Cloverfield actually could have been a really good movie. It had everything it needed, but it had more than what it needed. Specifically, us following a bunch of whiny twat-tards around mm-hmm. for an hour without seeing the monster. And again, as I've said multiple times, in my giant monster movies, I really don't give a shit about the human characters. I really don't.
You don't care about Bryan Cranston?
I don't. And so, I mean, I'm glad he you know, I'm glad he's in it to help the movie, to draw people in to see it, to help the franchise, to see, you know, so that hopefully going forward there'll be more movies.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of me sitting and watching and enjoying the movie, no, I don't go to a giant monster movie to see human character development. If I want that, I'll watch another fucking movie. If I go to a giant monster movie, then I'm going for the one thing that movie offers, don't get elsewhere. Giant fucking monsters.
Mm.
And yes, I don't give a rat's ass about the human characters.
Mm.
You know, I just kind of, you know, don't care. And that's what Cloverfield, that was the biggest mistake with Cloverfield, what they fucking did. They focused so much on the insignificant human element that the monster was just like a backdrop.
Mm-hmm.
And why even at that point bother?
Mm. Now, it's interesting because in the newest trailer for Godzilla, we know that Bryan Cranston's wife dies.
Yes.
She dies.
Or she becomes Dr. Manhattan.
I'm going to hedge my bet and say that she's dead. I'm gonna commit to that.
I don't know. I mean, we could see some giant blue titties smashing Manhattan. And I personally, I would welcome my new blue-tittied overlords.
But I don't know. I just get the feeling, because I know another character is playing the son of Bryan Cranston's character, another actor, you know, is Bryan Cranston's son in this. I get the feeling we're going to have a lot of, you let her die, Dad, and then, you know, father and son have to bond. Yeah.
And the son is actually Aaron Johnson from Kick-Ass.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. But, you know, you get what I'm saying, though, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. You're going to have, you were never there. You were always working.
Mm-hmm.
And you let mom die.
Yeah. Yeah.
And probably she died for your work. Do you have to also?
Mm-hmm.
Herg-a-derg. But by the time they reach their destination, where they're going at the end of the movie, whatever it is,
they'll hug.
I love you, Dad.
Yes. So I'm just saying, be prepared for some human schmaltz.
Oh, yeah, no, okay, I'm prepared for it. I know it's almost ubiquitous and obligatory
mm-hmm.
for some reason mm-hmm. that they throw this garbage in these movies.
Mm-hmm.
I just only hope they do it good to where it won't scare off the people that actually come for that garbage and at least keep them in the seat to help out, again, the overall movie and the franchise.
I hope, I just hope that Bryan Cranston plays a better Steve Martin than Matthew Broderick did, so.
You're just going to call everyone, every human character in a Godzilla movie Steve Martin, aren't you?
The lead male human in every Godzilla
movie.
Pardon?
What if they're Japanese?
Japanese Steve Martin. Asian Steve Martin.
You're an idiot.
What was isn't it, well, isn't the main Japanese character from the first Godzilla movie, isn't his character being reimagined in this one?
No.
Yeah, yeah, wasn't he? Like, the doctor who creates the oxygen destroyer.
Oh, yeah, I thought you meant Steve Martin. See, you've got me doing it now, goddamn.
No, not Steve, the main Japanese character.
Yeah, Dr. Sarazawa, yeah. No, he's in this too, yeah.
Okay, so amendment. Any white male lead in a Godzilla movie
is Steve Martin.
Any
Dr. Sarazawa.
Yes. Yes.
I'd like to remind our audience you have an email, basically a geekshow@gmail.com. If you would like to comment on Mike's racism against both Belgian Americans and, the Japanese community at large, please.
Okay.
Of course, evidently he thinks all of us crackers look the same too, because we're all Steve Martin. So evidently Mike just needs new glasses.
The thing is that I'm just a super racist, even against white people.
Are you racist against yourself?
Yes.
Do you ever, like, look at yourself in the mirror and you're like, you people?
Yes. All white people look the same to me. All Asians look the same. All black people look the same. Everyone just looks the same. I am, like, the opposite of the colorblind society. I just see everyone, including my own race, as a list of stereotypes.
So you're half Irish and half Jewish. Mm-hmm. Does it matter as like to like which side of your face you're looking at as to which side of you you're hating?
It really doesn't.
I mean, it's like on one day, do you call yourself a no good dirty Mick? And then you turn around and you're like, you people owning the banks. I mean, or it depends on how much, whatever mood you're in.
It depends on how much alcohol I have in me at the moment.
Okay, fair enough. I can understand that. I can understand that.
An exception, of course, is made if I'm getting drunk off Manischewitz.
Oh, then you can, like, kind of do, like, get the combo score going on.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's the good stuff.
I've had Manischewitz.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was too.
But moving on from that enlightening discussion.
No, one more question. One more. Is Manischewitz, like, Hebrew for ass in a bottle?
Yes, it is.
Because that's the impression I got. Anyways, yeah. Going on.
Oh, God. Speaking of which, happy Passover to our Jewish listeners.
Oh, and happy Easter to those who aren't.
Indeed. So, but moving on from that, let's talk about, I kind of tried to ram us into this conversation beforehand, but
phrasing.
Let's talk some Transformers IDW. We wish we could talk about Transformers Age of Extinction news. Unfortunately, the biggest piece of news to come out since our last show is that Hasbro is partnering with Frito-Lay for promotional activities in Turkey. So,
and you know, I would like to apologize to our listeners that we are not devoting our entire show to this. I must have argued with Mike for about an hour before we started recording, saying, look, you know, if it's good enough for TFW to put on, you know, their front page, then surely this is worth our time. And Mike, of course, well, being Mike, would have none of it.
Well, so instead, because I am a complete and total racist, I also hate the Turkish.
Fair enough. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I mean, it's because of his stubbornness and his attitude that you're getting the mediocrity that is this show that you're listening to instead of an hour and a half of us talking about the Hasbro Frito-Lay Turkey promotion. Turkey as in the country. There's not like a Butterball tie-in too, though that would be pretty cool.
you just buy a Butterball turkey and it's got like a giant Optimus Prime head on the packaging. On like the wrapper.
Yes. Or like in a Decepticon. Mm-hmm. Instead of Triptychon, it'd be Tryptophan.
Gravy is the right of all sentient beings.
Fucking totally.
So, yes, we are going to forgo any Age of Extinction discussion until we actually have Age of Extinction news. But our Transformers-centric talk for today will be centered around the IDW comic series. I want to talk about their new upcoming series called Dawn of the Autobots. Dark Cybertron, which had been the tie-in. They previously had two ongoing books, Robots in Disguise and More Than Meets the Eye. These were tied together in a cover called Dark Cybertron. Dark Cybertron concluded.
It sounded like you said Derp Cybertron at first. I'm like, oh, fuck, the Wheelie and Blur show? What the fuck?
That was the first episode, the first five episodes, though, of season three of G1, where Wheelie and Blur got their own dedicated subplot.
Cocaine is a hell of a drug.
Because the writers hate you personally.
I've been saying this for fucking years. Anyways, go on.
So yes, Dark Cybertron has concluded, and we are into, Dawn of the Autobots. And I'm kind of, I'm intrigued because, spoiler, warning, spoilers, at the end of Dark Cybertron, Megatron became an Autobot.
Okay. So, alright, look, let's kind of rewind a little bit. Let's kind of step back for a moment. Because you and I on this show have gone ad nauseum regarding Hasbro doing things wrong and on occasion Michael Bay doing things wrong, though we've been a lot more lenient on Michael Bay than a lot of people would, and a lot harsher on Hasbro than a lot of people have been. But let's take a look here at IDW and how they kind of fit into the broader scope of Transformers fiction, because you and I have been very brutal in some of our comments about almost every other aspect, fiction-wise, of this franchise. And yet, we've nary said anything about IDW. Well, we have, but it's been mostly in reference to, well, this toy is based on an IDW design, so on and so forth. And I know that, okay, of the medium that Transformers follow, you know, TV, movie, and comic books and video games, that most of our fans are probably going to be the least familiar with the comic book aspect.
Yes.
And I think we should kind of maybe preface this, kind of say why we care and why we kind of encourage most of our fans to care. When we have talked about IDW, we've said good things in terms of how what they've done with the fiction and what they've done for it.
You just want to know why, exactly. Well, let's give our listeners a background in IDW. And, you know, if anyone here, if anyone listening has been following IDW, consider this a pleasant retrospective, because I am quite a fan of IDW. I'd say my fandom of IDW's Transformers series, it's gone up and down. There have been peaks and there have been valleys. Thankfully, we seem to have we escaped the valley with the launch of More Than Meets the Eye and Robots in Disguise. The original IDW stuff, which focused on the Asian series, because you had Infiltration, Devastation, so on and so forth.
Masturbation?
I think that was only if you were over 18 and sent in a specific amount of coupons to IDW, then they'd send you the masturbation issues.
BRB, eBay.
Yeah. Anyway. Anyway, the Asian series is very significant. Even though it wasn't written by the same people who are directing the current fiction, it still introduced two plot points that will come back later. It introduced the legacy of Nova Prime, who is quickly becoming one of my favorite Transformers characters,
and it introduced
OR-13. OR-13 is pretty much the central plot element of Dark Cybertron. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Why do I love IDW? Because it's the best fiction going today. In terms of Transformers fiction, the live-action movies I like, but I like them in the realm of dumb action movies.
Right.
I'm not blind to their faults. And I openly admit that I like them in the sense I can turn my brain off and just kind of munch popcorn happily as Optimus Prime says cool things and things blow up.
America.
In the name of freedom, we will kill them all.
Fuck yes.
And then we get to the TV shows. Jack and I have gone on about how much we like Armada. But then following Armada, you had Energon, crap, Cybertron, which was entertaining crap. Wasn't as bad as Energon, but it was still kind of subpar in a lot and flawed in a lot of ways. Following that, we had the movies, of course, animated, which Jack and I have stated we are not fans of. And that was followed by Prime. And Prime is a mixed bag. I think, Jack, you and I are in agreement that it was a step in the right direction, but it really wasn't anything that lit the world on fire. It never had that awesome feel.
Yeah. There really weren't very many
hell yeah
moments in animated. I don't know. I mean, besides the obviously nostalgia-tinted vision of G1 and my latter appreciation of at least season 3 for Armada and the few and far between shining moments that Energon had, which aside from those moments, Energon was just a blazing pile of dog shit to me.
Energon was great when it was actually trying to be a sequel to Armada, and then it just became nonsense.
Yeah. You know, Transformers fiction on the small screen has been
hit and miss.
Very bittersweet for me. And IDW, though, on the other hand, I'm not claiming it's perfect. What I am saying is kind of what I've said before in the past on the show regarding IDW and their treatment of the TF fiction. And that's that, you know, if Hasbro tried half as hard as IDW does, or even just said, fuck it, we can't write, and just said, hey, IDW, can we have your plots? We'll hand you money. then I think that'd be pretty fucking epic.
It would. IDW did hit a bit of a low point for me with two series, All Hail Megatron and Maximum Dinobots, both of which kind of dragged on, and there was no real – I couldn't even tell you what the central plot to All Hail Megatron was, because they started off with, like, the premise of one of the Decepticons won. And then there was this long, complicated – it kind of seemed like they made things up as they went along as to how they wanted the end game to go. The ongoing after Maximum Dinobots, which was just Simon Furman masturbating over Grimlock for however many issues that series lasted. But then we kind of got – we had Heart of Darkness. We had Chaos Theory. And then – it all ended with the quote-unquote death of Optimus Prime. He didn't really die. He just kind of renounced his name as Optimus Prime. And then we got the dual series of More Than Meets the Eye and Robots in Disguise. And, of course, just prior to that, we had Last Stand of the Wreckers. And those three series, Last Stand of the Wreckers, More Than Meets the Eye, Robots in Disguise, were really what catapulted IDW to the next level. Because we had the writers, the people who wrote it, kind of, they did something interesting. They rely on existing stars of the Transformers fiction, but they also weren't afraid to kind of reinvent their personalities or just give personality to third and fourth string characters who never really had character. More Than Meets the Eye was exceptional in that regard because it's an entire series based on board a spaceship as Rodimus and Ultra Magnus basically take a bunch of Autobots searching for the Knights of Cybertron, who are supposed these Transformers of mythology who will help usher in a new golden age. But the thing is that most of the crew on the ship that they're leading are characters that are relatively unknown. I mean, you've heard of them as a Transformers fan. You kind of know they are in a very broad sense, but they've never had characters. And the writers of More Than Meets the Eye, James Roberts being the key one among them, really helped flesh them out. And it's exactly what he did earlier in Last Stand of the Wreckers, where you had the Wreckers Autobot team, where he made Star out of these nobody characters. And that's really what's been it's been energizing. It's been fresh. And it really accomplishes this whole thing of we want a Transformers series that focuses on different characters. And it does that, but it doesn't crap all over the established characters either. And that's what's so great about it.
Right. And that was kind of, you know, when we were talking about Transformers Animated and how they seem to, you know, they just completely rewrote several established characters, iconic established characters. It's one thing to take an established character and kind of change their birth. When you take an iconic character, Optimus Prime, Megatron, Starscream, you know, we like characters and fucking with shit. That's, you know, the more iconic, the more folly you're going to run into. And IDW, though they've had their kind of points where they've gone out and done anything that was outright insulting
to a,
or just blatantly stupid
to a character. I'm trying to think, like, nothing's coming to mind. I could see if a few fans of the late G1 comics were not entirely happy with how IDW handled Thunderwing in the Storm something or other. It was one of the first IDW miniseries, and it centered around Thunderwing being this unstoppable monster, and it completely rewrote his character from the original Marvel G1 comics. So I could see if you were a fan of those, how maybe Thunderwing's new depiction was maybe not up your alley. But all in all, it's really hit a really fine line between reinventing characters in a positive way and giving new characters an emphasis, yet respecting the iconic nature of past characters. It's almost a juggling act in a lot of ways, but they've pulled it off almost flawlessly, I think. And another thing that I love about IDW in general is that the writers who are directing this really care about the backstory. They really care about the world building. We've got Megatron Origins, which is probably the most thorough and in-depth explanation for how Megatron becomes Megatron, how his rise through one of, like, the lower class of Cybertron really kind of sowed the seeds for the Decepticon Rebellion. And they tried to take a lot of that and put it into Transformers Prime, but it never really had, they didn't really emphasize it as much as IDW has, and it's really kind of made Megatron a more complex character. But you've got the background to the war, you've got the legacy of the Primes, where IDW has explored the actions of Nova Prime, of Nominus Prime, of Sentinel Prime, of Zeta Prime, the Primes that predate Optimus. And it's kind of given the Prime legacy some meat to it, something that's of actual substance that they can you can plug Optimus on the end of it and say, you know, this is what Optimus is trying to operate. These are the constraints and the expectations placed on him, as we know what his predecessors are. We know what their predecessors have done, and I think that's really cool that they've explored topics. They've explored primalism, which is the Autobot religion. They've explored the notion that not the Autobot religion, the Transformer, the Cybertronian religion. They've explored that there are quote-unquote atheist Cybertronians and how their worldview kind of works into things. They've looked at political movements, functionalism, the corruption of the Cybertronian Senate. And some of that might sound like Star Wars prequel stuff, but it's been done in an engaging way that doesn't seem boring. It seems like, wow, I'm really glad that I know this now, because it's helped build the world that I'm engaged in. It's been a classic case of world building, and as a fan of fiction, I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I do too. And I haven't gotten to read as much of the IDW comics as you have. Mostly just due to time constraints on my part. I tend to take more onto my plate a lot of times than I can handle. You know, what I've read of them, I've thoroughly enjoyed. And, you know, what I said earlier about Hasbro needing to borrow more from IDW, they actually have, to a good extent, I know. I mean, one of the shining points of Transformers Prime was their portrayal of Ultra Magnus.
Exactly.
You know, so, I mean, they even recognize that this is a good thing when they do this.
It is. It is. It wouldn't surprise – we don't know anything more than anyone else does when it comes to who's actually going to be in the new Transformers cartoon that's coming out with Bumblebee as the leader. But It wouldn't surprise me if a few cast members were taken from IDW. I wouldn't be surprised to see Swerve or Tailgate or trying to think who else could they have. Swerve, Tailgate, maybe Cyclonus, maybe Ultra Magnus. Just really kind of play with some of the characters that IDW's given new life to. So, that's definitely, Hasbro definitely does recognize a good thing when they see it. It's just going to be interesting to see how far they let IDW run with it, how much fun they let IDW have with it, and how willing are they to let those ideas infiltrate the quote-unquote main fiction, being the TV shows.
Well, I don't see, you know, how that could be a bad thing for them to do that, because, okay, clearly, look, Transformers, in terms of the TV show, it started as a way to hawk toys.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it largely still is a way to hawk toys.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, let's not kid ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
But some of us, you know, because we grew up with it and kind of the way our generation has become, we've kind of appointed ourselves, our generation, as almost like the caretakers of this fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And we, in the sense that we advocate, we constantly advocate, for what we want to see and the direction that we think will do this franchise. And all of us are like this. I mean, whether it's like, you know, you and I, or the people talking about Beast Wars and animated, we can all at least agree, that you and I are all always right, and that even disagrees with us should be shot. Oh, wait, no, sorry, not that. That we all want, you know, we all want to see the franchise go in a direction that is meaningful and dignified, that it makes it more than just a toy commercial.
Mm-hmm.
And we just disagree on what the best way to do that is. And that's where, you know, you end up with the petty bickering and discussions about Coco the monkey and calling people Hitler. And
no joke, I've actually been involved in a thread where Hitler got invoked in a discussion over Transformers Animated.
Yeah.
I don't know how that happens. I still don't know how it happened, but it did.
And you also wrote like this fucking thesis paper comparing Nova Prime. I started to say Nova Kane. I started to say fucking Nova Kane. Nova Prime to Charlemagne. And I remember you're like, yeah, I'm in this forum thread, you know. I'm like, all right. And I go on there and I read your post. I'm like, Jesus Christ, dude, this is so above the internet's fucking head. You're writing like a fucking thesis paper, making an analogy from Nova Prime to fucking Charlemagne, and then someone's like, Hitler.
Yeah, that. Hey, you know, I thought it was a comparison worth making.
No, it was. I mean, and the people on the forum that can grasp it and read it, and I'm sure there were quite a few.
There were, yeah.
You know, and I'm not saying everyone on the internet's stupid, because I'm on the internet and I'm stupid. Doesn't mean that I think everyone else is too. But it's just, you know, it was just kind of funny, just like this out of context from what you would expect to find, mm-hmm. kind of a deal. But yeah, you know, that's where we all kind of – that's our common bond. We want to see what's best for the fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And I think IDW does as well, whereas Hasbro, I mean, they want what's good for the fiction because it helps them sell toys.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they shoehorn things in, such as with Transformers Prime,
mm-hmm.
the whole Predacons thing. That was – thrown in at the last minute.
It was. The Prime writers said that they had all of season 3 planned out before Hasbro was like, dragons!
Right. Giant robot fucking dragons, make them happen!
I'm convinced that Aaron Archer just got done playing Skyrim or something and was like, dragons!
Yeah, all of them. Now! They're all just sitting there, like, you know, scratching their heads like, LOL, what? Okay, dragons. And fucking... you know, I get it. Hasbro wants to make toys. They want to sell money. And their toys, and in turn, create these characters that we want backstories behind and fiction for. And it's a symbiotic relationship.
And But that's what IDW has finally – I love IDW's backstories. And they explore the ins and outs of the quote-unquote primal religion, Primus and the Guiding Hand. When they talk about the Knights of Cybertron, or even when they talk about just the politics, and they talk about functionalism and how functionalism was kind of used to oppress people by kind of shoehorning a Cybertronian into a profession just based solely on their alternate mode. That's interesting stuff that I like. I want to hear more of it.
Right. And they – IDW realizes that their audience is smarter – than most other, you know, than the writers for the Transformers cartoon series give credit for. And I understand that when you're on a TV and it's a cartoon, you have to kind of write in mind for a child.
Mm-hmm.
I get it, but there's a way to do both.
Yes.
I mean, there's a way to have that subtext of symbolism and analogy while at the same time making it interesting for a kid. And kids aren't as I've said many times on the show, kids are not as stupid as a lot of people write them to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can understand a lot. They get things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so IDW gives its audience the compliment and the credit for being able to absorb these plot lines and to draw things out of them that they write into it. And it makes the entire experience better as a result.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. More Than Meets the Eye on its own, and More Than Meets the Eye gets a lot of love. A lot, 99% of it, I'd say, is deserved. People talk about it maybe becoming overhyped. I don't think so. I think it's just that good. More Than Meets the Eye provided, but my point here is that More Than Meets the Eye is not the only great thing IDW's done. Robots in Disguise is very good. Last Stand of the Wreckers is very good. But More Than Meets the Eye was the one that kind of got a lot of people watching, reading Transformers comic books. And More Than Meets the Eye just gave you so many interesting characters from sources that you never would have thought before, because they took all of these background characters and gave them personalities that you actually gave a crap about. And stuff like More Than Meets the Eye, stuff like Last Stand of the Wreckers, it's been complimented by people in the comic industry who aren't even Transformers fans as saying, these are some of the best comic books on the market today.
Right.
Not just Transformers comics. They're definitely the best Transformers comics that have ever been made. But these are the best comic books, period. And I think that really says something. Obviously, yeah. I'm not saying that they're the best ones in total, but it's really cool to hear non-Transformers comic book fans say, oh, yeah, those Transformers comics are actually pretty good on their own merits.
Yeah. Just as people who say they're not really Transformers fans liking a podcast that deals a lot with Transformers. Thanks, guys. But, yeah, shameless plug. You know, it's one of those things where the toys that we grew up with kind of – made a difference on our childhood and how we became as adults.
Mm-hmm.
And IDW realizes that good fiction can have just as much of an impact on those fans now that they are adults.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when something transcends the boundaries of merely being a toy and becomes actual, you know, good fiction, at that point it becomes art and it has the ability to inspire and all that other good sappy shit.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying it's at that point, but I'm saying that they're at least treating it seriously.
Indeed.
And that's what we need to see more of.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
That being said, though, now where we're at with this series, maybe give a little bit of a lead up as to kind of what the series, like the previous series left off with. Nothing, you know, broad stroke it, giggity. And then tell us what we can expect going forward. It's without the context of what happened, what's happening next is kind of what?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay, so Shockwave in Dark Cybertron, and I'm only going to briefly recap the last issue of Dark Cybertron. I'll throw out a spoiler warning, although the book's been out for about a week, maybe a bit more so anyone who really wanted to read it probably has by now. Shockwave has a plan. Shockwave wants to collapse all of space and time around Cybertron into a singularity to power Cybertron forever and keep Cybertron as sort of like this perpetual state of – it's kind of not – it's not really clear that we explained what he wants, but Cybertron is going to be perpetually powered by the collapsing space-time continuum.
Because fucker can't be arsed to go to Walmart and buy batteries.
Yep. Over the course of Dark Cybertron, Bumblebee and Megatron have actually become very close. Bumblebee kind of convinces Megatron to see him as, kind of to see himself as the despotic, overlord that he's become, because in the IDW series, Megatron started off as a good-intentioned revolutionary. Megatron and Bumblebee bond. Shockwave kills Bumblebee. Thank God.
Yay!
Megatron picks up Bumblebee's Autobot insignia, and then Megatron and Optimus Prime team up, stop Shockwave, and then Megatron becomes an Autobot, or declares himself committed to the Autobot cause of establishing a just peace on Cybertron now that the war is over and Shockwave's been stopped. So that's where we're at. Dark Cybertron is over. The Decepticons are still around. Soundwave is extremely pissed off that Megatron betrayed them by becoming an Autobot. And it seems as if Galvatron, who was a different character entirely in IDW.
Which I think that in and of itself is pretty awesome.
Yes. But Galvatron now looks to become the leader of the Decepticons, or what's left of the Decepticons, because the sense that I got is that the Autobots are the last ones standing. Megatron is now an Autobot. Optimus Prime is an Autobot, obviously. And they seem committed towards kind of building a better future together, as it were. So it's going to be interesting to see where that goes. And they're breaking the new series called Dawn of the Autobots into three parts. Megatron is going to join Rodimus in the Lost Light, in the search for the Knights of Cybertron. Wingblade, the fan-created Autobot, is going to be the focus of a story set on Cybertron.
It's Windblade.
Windblade, yes, sorry. And Optimus Prime will lead some Autobots back to Earth, although I don't see why there's a storyline reason for this, but I'm sure they'll explain it all, and it will be awesome. But that's kind of where we are. And this is the big thing that a lot of people are taking out of it. Megatron is an Autobot. And not only is he an Autobot, but Megatron is now joining the Lost Light crew, which was the centerpiece of More Than Meets the Eye, which was the series that got a lot of people paying attention to IDW Transform comics. So a lot of stuff to look forward to, a lot of stuff to speculate about. I have to ask you, Jack, Autobot Megatron, your thoughts.
I think it's
just
pretty,
in general.
I think it's pretty cool, actually.
Okay.
I guess you're probably expecting me to rant about it, maybe.
No, I just wanted to hear your thoughts, man.
But I actually think it's pretty cool. I think it's, again, it's a case of shifting things up, making things different,
mm-hmm.
in a way that doesn't negate anything that's been established.
Mm-hmm.
It builds on it, and it makes it more interesting.
Yes.
You're not tearing down what's there. You're building onto it. And I think that's really interesting, because that raises up a whole other list of questions. The first, and I think probably the most obvious, is, mm-hmm. Is this going to be a permanent thing? Is he going to, is about more than the programming? Is he going to be a traitor? Is there going to be friction, basically? And I'm sure there probably will be to a point, and that's probably part of their idea, but is it going to be severe enough to where he once again, becomes a Decepticon, or, commits some kind of shenanigans, basically?
I get your thing. It's interesting, really, because they made the last episode of Dark Cybertron. They made a big deal out of this. Megatron basically saying to Optimus, hey, I've changed. And Optimus being like, really? And Megatron had to say, it's like, no. Look, I'm serious. This isn't a trick. I'm not trying. This isn't a game. I'm sincere. And it's kind of like, okay, you know, if he's sincere, Optimus accepted it, we're going.
And the first thing he does is he ships him as far away from himself as he can and sticks him with fucking Hot Rod.
Yeah, he's like, yes, Megatron, I believe you. Here, Rodimus, you go take him far, far away from Cybertron and me.
the further away, the better.
Yes. Once again, Rodimus is getting the, Optimus pawns Rodimus, pawns, you know, shit off on Rodimus because that's just the way that things work. But, the idea that I got from the end of, Dark Cybertron was that this was sincere. And I'm not saying that that it can't be undone without it being a mistake, but they're going to really have to work to explain how any sort of backsliding is going to be acceptable, because it'll just seem cheap if he just goes, LOL, it was all a trick, I'm evil. they really have to tell a good story if they want Megatron to go back again. And maybe my opinion will change on this the further I get away from the final issue of Dark Cybertron, but I took away from that being utterly convinced of Megatron's sincerity, and if it turns out he wasn't sincere, that kind of cheapens the end of that story for me a bit. So I'm not saying it can't be done, it just has to be done very carefully, in my opinion.
Right. I get you. And I'm assuming that, you know, with Galvatron taking over the helm of the Decepticons, that he's going to become the primary antagonist, or at this point, are the Decepticons even a strong enough force to even pose much of a threat?
That's what I find interesting. This is what I find interesting. There are Decepticons still around. Because everything I sort of got from the end of Dark Cybertron seems to indicate, to me at least, that the Autobots are more or less firmly in control. It's this series is going to be called Dawn of the Autobots, for crying out loud. To me, it almost kind of seems like the ultimate post-war reconstruction project. And I'm not sure how the Decepticons fit into that. I don't know if they're going to go with guerrilla tactics, because what is interesting is that when Galvatron takes command of the Decepticons in Dark Cybertron, he says, it's time for a new approach.
Right.
So I don't know if maybe they become a guerrilla outfit and they start waging that kind of conflict against the Autobots, or what happens. I don't know how Megatron plays into that. I'm not sure how he can, if Megatron's off on the lost light kind of exploring space of Rodimus. I'm not sure if he'll have much interaction with the Decepticons back on Cybertron. And from what we got from the preview for the Optimus Prime side of this thing, with Optimus Prime going back to Earth, it mentions how the humans have a dark secret, dun-dun-dun. So I'm sure
I'm sure the Autobots have already seen 4chan. I don't think they have to worry about that dark secret.
But my point is, though, that on that side of things, I think that the Decepticons won't be a factor in the Earth portion of the story, because that conflict will be the Autobots and the humans. Mm-hmm. More than meets the eye with the Lost Light, that has never been really a series that needed the Decepticons for antagonists, or a series that even really needed antagonism. It's more so about character moments.
Right.
So I don't necessarily think the Decepticons will factor in there. The Decepticons will factor on Cybertron, though. Megatron and Optimus won't be there. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I don't think they're going to become a antagonist. I don't think they're going to become the antagonist. I think they're going to become a antagonist. They're going to be one of the antagonistic groups across this three-pronged story that they're going to try to tell.
I gotcha. Mm-hmm. So basically on Earth. It's going to be, you know, Autobots trying to deal with humans. Mm-hmm. You know, on Cybertron, maybe fighting some Decepticons here and there. And then, you know, fucking Rodimus and Megatron bitching about who left the coffee pot on.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Yes. Yes, it will. With Ultra Magnus. Because Ultra Magnus, IDW Ultra Magnus is awesome.
Lol.
That actually would be interesting to see. But that's kind of where we're at in terms of Transformers fiction. Autobot Megatron is a thing. I'm looking forward to it. I hope they don't go back on it, or if they do, that they actually tell a good story. They just don't reveal it was all a ploy. And going from there, all I can say is IDW's yet to let me down, since they handed the reins over to James Roberts, and I don't expect them to let me down in the future. So here's hoping to another couple years of great IDW stories.
Indeed. And here's hoping that Hasbro will like them enough to start incorporating even more of their ideas into the shit that they do.
Rewind for the Hall of Fame!
Lol.
But moving on from that into the realm of World of Warcraft, last week, to top off our mega show, we mentioned Azeroth Choppers, that the good people at Blizzard Entertainment were going to be teaming up with Paul Jr. from Orange County Choppers to do what is probably what looks to be a web series called Azeroth Choppers. And the premise
isn't the show called American Chopper?
No, I'm pretty sure it's called Orange County Choppers.
Well, whatever. It's that fucking chopper show on TV. Everyone knows what the fuck we're talking about.
Yes.
Whatever.
Anyway, the point is that Azeroth Choppers will be a web-based series to recap what we went over last week. There will be two teams of mechanics working on two bikes, one for the Horde, one for the Alliance. When both bikes are done, fans will vote, and the winning bike will become a free in-game mount for everyone on that faction. And we talked about how the Horde's probably going to win, because even though there are more Alliance players than Horde players, the Horde players tend to be more passionate. So they'll probably, you know, vote in larger numbers.
Yeah.
But all that aside, the first episode of Azeroth Choppers aired. We only talked about the trailer for the series last week. The first episode aired, and Jack, was it me or did Paul Jr. look very twitchy in the scenes where he was talking to the Blizzard staff in the Blizzard offices?
It did. He goes in there with his wife, mm-hmm. and so they're sitting there, and he especially had this kind of like weird look on his face, mm-hmm. like a very uncomfortable, kind of an uneasy look. Maybe it was, I'm guessing it was probably something that was thrown in, because the quote unquote reality shows mm-hmm. have about as much reality as a Michael Bay movie.
Yeah.
That's just the way they are. I mean, they're pretty much, as far as I'm concerned, the jokes of the airwaves, but that's neither here nor there. So he's sitting there and he's looking very uncomfortable, and I can just imagine, you know, him and his wife walking in there, seeing all these fucking, like, green shirtless orcs all over the walls on these pictures and shit, and his wife saying, "Paul, you told me you weren't going to take me to another place like this." And so they're sitting. Yeah.
Just to me, the idea that – the feeling I got is I don't think I'd be out of bounds to say that Paul Jr. is probably not someone who has played very many MMOs.
Yeah, I would be willing to venture that, yeah.
And to me, it kind of seems like, you know, he really wasn't sure what he was getting into, and then he shows up at Blizzard, and you have Chris Metzen and the Blizzard staff talking to him about knights and orcs and bone and plate mail, and he's just like, I don't know what's going on.
Are they trying to come on to me?
Yeah! Like, I'm not trying to disparage the guy at all. I'm just kind of saying I think this was a world that he is not very familiar with, and he wasn't quite sure what he was getting into when he signed up for this.
Yeah, he was – I mean, if it wasn't just a thing that was rehearsed or staged or whatever, he was out of his element, or at least he appeared to be. And he did seem to kind of soften up a little bit before he showed them the prototypes that he had rigged together, or the frames,
for the bikes. Yeah, yeah. Which was another hilarious part. So not only were the mechanics be split into Horde and Alliance teams, but the Blizzard staff will be split into Team Alliance and Team Horde. Each side sort of working with their mechanic counterparts to create bikes that reflect both the Alliance and the Horde. Chris Metzen is on Team Alliance, which absolutely floors me. That's hilarious. But the main thing is that both sides sort of talk to Paul. They sort of tell them what each faction is about. And then he goes, so I've already kind of put together some basic frames together for these bikes. And when he says that, both the Alliance members and the Horde members, both the Alliance and Horde teams are like, well, we weren't expecting this.
The man that we hired to make bikes actually made bikes? What manner of madness is this?
Yeah, like when he said that, it was all, I mean, this is what kind of, I think, gives credence, Jack, to you saying that there's no reality here, because it seems like fabricated drama. I don't understand where this indignation came from on Blizzard's part. It's like, you've created bike frames for the bikes we asked you to make?
Insolent fool!
Yeah, I'm just not sure what was going on there. I just don't know. I just don't know. But another thing that I found interesting, and you and I talked about this, was the first thing we talked about after we both watched the first episode. Mm-hmm. The level of enthusiasm. Now, you thought that Chris Metzen was kind of just going through the motions describing what the Alliance was about.
Yeah.
Now, I'll be the first to jump on that bandwagon, because Chris Metzen has proven time and time again that he is not a fan of the Alliance at all.
It's maybe not that he dislikes the Alliance. It's that his Horde affinity stretches beyond anything that he could feel for the Alliance, and he finds the Horde fascinating and interesting, and he himself has said that he doesn't know how to approach the Alliance in terms of writing and from a creative standpoint. And he goes into describing to Paul Jr. about, well, you know, the Alliance are kind of like, you know, the medieval knight thing. They're like superheroes, and they're all about honor and sacrifice and freedom. And, you know, and he did say, well, they're definitely the classier of the two factions. But I don't think that last part was him believing it. I think that was the last part of him filling the role as the head of quote-unquote Team Alliance.
Nah, I think he was nah. That was sincere. I mean, like, even Horde players, I think, would admit the Alliance is quote-unquote classier. Whether or not you think classier is a good thing or not, again, is entirely up to you. But I don't think it's a stretch to say that even Horde players admit that the Alliance is a bit more class.
Fair enough.
But I actually found myself defending Chris Metzen, because I didn't even think he was apathetic so much. I just think that the guy who was the head of the Horde team, whose name escapes me,
Sam Didier.
Sam Didier, yes. Sam Didier is describing the Horde, and I don't think it was a case of him just being enthusiastic. I just think that he was so over-the-top enthusiastic that Chris Metzen seemed kind of apathetic, just by comparison, because Sam Didier is talking to Paul Jr., and he's like, and the Horde, it's about bones and chains and gore and lots of spikes.
And my raging hate boner. I mean, what?
Yeah, I mean, he was, the only thing that would have completed that better would have been if he got up and turned around and knocked a lamp over.
Lol.
I mean, so in that case, yeah, I think that Didier was just really into the Horde. Trust me, I'd be the first to jump on Metzen if Metzen gave, like,
Phrasing.
You know, I'd be the first to attack Metzen if Metzen was like, was all, oh, alliance, whatever. But I honestly didn't get that feeling. I just thought Didier was so over the top in his horde, lust that Metzen kind of suffered by comparison. But I don't think Metzen was even necessarily, I can't find much to fault with him outside of his, the man we hired to design bikes designed a bike moment. One thing I wanted to talk, the last thing I wanted to bring up about this, which kind of goes into reality TV being so goddamn scripted. The end. Paul Jr. shows both sides, the frames for the bikes that he's gonna make for the Alliance and the Horde. And the assembled Blizzard staff goes, Chris Metzen goes, so Paul, we have good news and we have bad news. And Paul's like, oh, what the fuck is this bad news? And Chris goes, good news. Both sides loved the bikes you put together. And the bad news is, wait till next week.
Yeah, we have some good news and we have some bad news. Oh, wait till next week to find out the bad news. I'm predicting that Chris Metzen has to go boom boom. And that's the bad news. It's always going to be something that's going to be stupid, mm-hmm. With these shows. I know that, for one thing, they don't really make any serious alterations to the frames because they show the previews for next week and it shows the frames pretty much as they're presented being worked on.
Mm-hmm.
So you know that right there. So, I mean, you know, unless the bad news approaching this from a reality stage drama standpoint is going to be, we need them in 48 hours.
Oh, God.
Or a kitten will die.
Yeah.
You know, something stupid like that. Some kind of artificial
manufactured drama.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it's going to be. And can't be arsed to care.
I got the same feeling that I got watching, you and I were watching. You and I used to spend we used to watch Impact, TNA Impact weekly.
Right, TNA, yeah.
And after TNA, for a while, the time slot right after TNA Impact on Spike TV was filled by a reality show based on miners from, I think it was West Virginia?
Yeah.
The location doesn't matter. Point is, it was a reality show based on miners. Because apparently this is a thing where all you really need for a television show is to film people doing their jobs.
Yeah, totally.
So, you know, it's one of those nights, Impact's over, and both of us are too arsed to, you know, change the channel. So, we're watching this show, and the drama of the episode was that one of the ventilation fans in the mine shaft was potentially gonna break. And I'm paraphrasing, but the sentiment's the same. If the fan breaks, the miners will have to orderly exit the mine.
Not in Himmel, nine!
Yeah. I mean, the miners have easy access to the entrance to the mine. They know how to get there. There's not a problem with any elevator shafts that are taking them deeper into the mine, so it's not an issue of can they get there. They're quite capable to, it's very easy getting out of the mine. That's not the drama. The drama is just that they will have to leave.
The drama is, will they get a paid smoke break?
Exactly. No, exactly. I said at the time, it wouldn't surprise me if Spike sent someone over to like break the fan to have something on the show.
Because they decided that, you know, causing a cave-in might get bad publicity.
Yeah.
So they sent someone in to just fucking, you know, unplug a wire from the fan.
Yeah. And the actual act of the miners leaving was so inconsequential that when they actually had to leave, it was accomplished over a cut. They're like, the fan has broken. Next cut. All the miners are out of the mine.
Well, yeah.
You know. Okay, so what? Exactly. They're going to have a paid smoke break while they fix the fan.
You know for a fact that when they were exiting the mine, that no one even so much as stubbed their toe.
Yes.
Because otherwise it would have been, Harv has sustained a foot injury. He will be checked out by the mine's resident
physician to make sure he is fit to return to duty and does not require additional medical care.
Exactly. Exactly. That was probably the most blasé mine evacuation in the history of mining.
Yeah. these shows to me, and for once I'm actually not trying to be insulting to anyone who enjoys things like this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to say this. I'm not going to go on a long rant or a diatribe as I'm prone to do. I'm going to be nice for a change. Mark it on the fucking calendar.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that these shows appeal to the base instincts of humanity and not in a good way. I feel that these shows are so popular because they appeal to parts of us that are not our higher selves, that are not really capable of – they appeal to our inner idiot. I'll just be honest with you. And I'm not saying that people who watch these shows or like these shows are idiots. I'm saying that that's the part that admittedly is in every one of us that these shows appeal to, and that's why I don't like them. It's they're trying to foster this. They're trying to cater to this. They're trying to bring this out for the sake of, well, money.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm a capitalist through and through. I despise anything of a socialist nature. Don't get me wrong. My right-wing credentials here are not – I'm not, you know, giving those up. I'm simply saying that from an intellectual and a moral standpoint, I find it to be kind of repugnant.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with what you're saying there about appealing to the idiot inside of us. I'm just not sure. I just don't understand why. I mean, what part of base human nature wants to see other people just kind of doing their jobs?
It's not the doing their jobs part.
Okay.
It's because if you notice, okay, if you look at all these types of jobs, the axemen, these guys in the mine. One moment. I got a little bit of a frog in my throat. Technical difficulties. See, Greg, you didn't have to edit that out. So we do it ourselves. So, so you know, yeah, and what the fucking Coast Guard show they've got on the Weather Channel.
Seriously? The Weather Channel?
I'm sure.
Channel's doing reality TV now?
It's 40% of their programming actually is reality TV, believe it or not.
That's another problem I have is reality TV just takes over these dedicated niche channels. Like the History Channel used to be about history. Now it's Pawn Stars and Axemen.
Can Chumlee find the bathroom in time? Dun-dun-dun, commercial break.
Yeah. So go on. What you were saying about all these jobs. Coast Guards, axemen, miners.
Well, okay, they're all dangerous jobs for the most part.
Yes.
And it's the same reason. Okay, NASCAR.
Mm-hmm.
Let's face it, most NASCAR fans watch to see crashes. I'm not a NASCAR fan, but the few times I've watched it, I get super interested when there's a crash.
So you're saying that people watch these reality TV shows on the off chance that, you know, there's going to be a cave-in on the mining show, or
right.
that like
I mean,
the axe, or that the lumberjack cuts a tree and it falls down the wrong way.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. And not that we want, not that people want to see anyone die necessarily. I don't know. There's some fine line that really can't be articulated here as to what the. The whole thing of just seeing that happen and seeing, oh my God, maybe the things that can go wrong that we don't see on an everyday basis, or the things that the vicarious adrenaline rush, maybe that people get from narrowly escaping danger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe that's what it is. Cause in most of these cases, I mean, no one hardly ever gets hurt, even in NASCAR. Well, Dale Earnhardt notwithstanding, but too soon. I mean, it's been 12, 13 years. But
it's got to be at least 15 years before we can joke about it, sir.
Well, I liked Dale. I mean, you know, no offense to any Intimidator fans out there. But, you know, it usually when there's a crash, nothing happens. I mean, no one is seriously injured. And I think we kind of know that. We've become a victim of our own advances in technology to where safety has gotten to the point where it's such a concern, and that even when shit does go wrong, it's very seldom that anyone sustains kind of permanent injury. And I think it's that vicarious adrenaline rush of seeing danger narrowly escaped and all that other garbage.
I know
all these people.
I know I'm going to be watching Azeroff choppers on the off chance that Chris Metzen's hand gets welded to a motorcycle.
Well, I think in that case, I think in the case of shows like Orange County Choppers or American Choppers, I'm pretty sure it's American Choppers.
No, there is there is one called. I'm pretty sure. Whatever.
It's this show with the fucking choppers.
Yeah.
Anyways, it's seen the creation. That's now I have watched that show, even though I can't remember the bloody name of it. I have watched that show, and it's pretty cool because I do like seeing what they made. Now, I used to love Monster Garage.
Okay.
Where they would just make just crazy fucking cars and shit that did insane things. And I like that because I like classic cars and things like that. So, you know, that's my testosterone credentials there for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I would enjoy seeing that. So there's those kind as well where you know, the appeal is to see the finished product and the technique and skill that's involved making it. But they've gotten to where they even throw in manufactured drama with that usually. And then you've got what I call the really lame ones, which to me are like the lowest rung on the threshold. And these are like the Jersey Shore, the Real Housewives, and the fucking Duck Dynasties, and all this shit, where the whole thing is just simple, petty drama.
Mm.
And that's all it is.
Now, it
plays on people's just – and I really can't say anything to excuse this. I can't say, well, it's a vicarious adrenaline rush. I can't say it's, you know, seeing how something awesome is made. This is just pure – it's Jerry Springer. It's Jerry Springer.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Jerry Springer was actually – interestingly enough, Jerry Springer was outed as full of shit, being just as staged as anything else.
Well, yeah, of course.
By professional wrestling, actually.
Oh, that's bad. That's like when China fucking bitched us for spending too much money.
I mean, basically what happened was the Iron Sheik, who is perhaps best remembered as being the guy to transition the WWE title from Bob Backlund to Hulk Hogan back in 84, he appeared on Jerry Springer using a different name, basically. So Jerry Springer was like, oh, we've got a wrestler, and here it is. And then I forgot what the name was, but then out came the Iron Sheik. And then wrestling fans were like, wait a minute, that's the Iron Sheik. And then it was revealed, of course, that Jerry Springer – it's all staged. Springer's just as staged as anything else, and so is reality TV.
You know, that reminds me of actually the one thing Jerry Springer said, and it's a quote you've heard me say before. It is a quote by Jerry Springer.
Mm-hmm.
That I just find hilarious, and it kind of fits the situation too. Something stupid that he should have known better than to do, but he did it. And Jerry Springer said, and I quote, "I once spent time with a woman and paid her with a check. I wish I hadn't have done that."
Wasn't he mayor of Cincinnati at one point too?
Cincinnati, Chicago.
I think it was Cincinnati. I don't think it was mayor of Chicago.
Sometimes no, Chicago. I'm pretty sure it was Chicago.
I don't think it was Chicago.
God damn it.
But anyway, point yes. And in a lot of ways, Jerry Springer is sort of like the impetus for this sort of reality TV, I guess. People like seeing potential train wrecks.
Okay, it was Cincinnati. You're right.
Yep. Nailed it. Anyway, well, you know, those are sort of our thoughts on reality TV. Azeroth Choppers should be interesting. I know I'm going to tune. I'm legitimately serious. I'm going to watch every single episode of that.
Well, I mean, they put it on the front page of MMO Champion, so I don't have much else I can do on my lunch break, so I'll watch it.
Yeah. Again, you know, me, Chris Metzen, will get his hand welded to a motorcycle, and that'll be fun.
Or maybe they'll paint it for green, and Chris Metzen will just fucking stick his cut in the tailpipe. The Thrallmobile must masturbate now.
That would be awesome if they called the horde chopper the Thrallmobile.
Yeah.
Just like the headlights up by like the lights up front. You just got like a giant Thrall face.
I still find it. I mean, I know we mentioned this last show as well, but I still find it really funny that, you know, they show Varian Wrenn riding the chopper. And for the Horde, it's just generic orc dude.
Well, who else? They can't use anyone else, I guess. I guess they could crawl.
They can't use fucking Vol'jin. Vol'jin can't ride a fucking motorcycle.
Well, the whole thing is they want humans and orcs, and so he's not an orc.
Racist!
Yeah, I mean, that kind of goes back to what we were saying last show. Vol'jin's time as war chief, I think, is Numid. Because it's not that Metzen can't write for the Alliance, it's that he can't write for non-orcs. So, yeah.
The thing that I get from it, though, isn't he just that. Mm. I get that, you know what, our king is so badass, he rides a fucking motorcycle, bitch.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is true. But, yeah, Vol'jin's not lasting past Warlords of Draenor as war chief at all.
Jaina calls it cheat.
What?
Jaina calls bitch seat.
Yes.
Now, see, basically a geek show at gmail.com.
Although, that would be interesting if Jaina actually hooked up Vary and Rin, and then they just, like, screwed using their mutual hatred of the Horde as thrusting power. That's right.
Whoa, and I'm the more vulgar one on the show. Jesus.
That's right. Good old-fashioned Horde-fueled hate fuck.
Oh, wow, man.
Yep.
You know what? That could work.
And on that note, ladies and gentlemen, I bid you adieu.
2 dozen people just breathed a collective sigh of relief.
For Jack, this is Mike, signing off episode 11 of Basically a Geek Show.
Good night, bastards.
Try again.